This next story is about when that space is violated and how a survivor turned the tables in an unexpected way. Please note that this story deals with sexual assault. There's nothing explicit, but it may not be appropriate for kids. It's about 10 minutes long. Erica Dudrow lives in Bellingham, and she says she was never much of a party person, but in 2014 she was dating a guy who liked to hit the bars, and she did her best to keep up. That was getting harder to do.
The partner at that time had gotten into some harder drugs, and one of them was Molly. Friday, I showed up at his house after work, and he was already there with a friend, and they were doing lines of Molly. And he gives me a capsule of it, and I ingested it. Another friend showed up, and there was talking and drinking. We decided to walk downtown to a bar. It was probably about midnight at that time. And I remember walking down the street towards the bar and being in a really good mood, thinking, you know, like I'm having a really good time and getting along with all these people, and then starting to black out. So the next thing I remember was feeling somebody's hands inside me, and just how hard it was to wake up. It felt like climbing out of black tar. And then when I finally was able to wake up, I'm in an apartment. It's not mine. I don't understand why I'm there. I look up, there's a man over at a sink with his back to me in his underwear doing his dishes. I stand up, I realize that I'm naked from the waist down, but I still have my shirts on, I still have my jacket. I always assumed that if I was attacked by a man, we would fight to the death, that I would not let myself be assaulted. It never occurred to me that I might be blacked out for most of the event. It was really hard to put it all together. And the first thing that I thought of in that moment is, where are the people that I was with what felt like a moment ago? And I said that out loud, where are my friends? And this person said, you shouldn't worry about that. You should find them in the morning. You shouldn't go anywhere right now. I started to leave. He said, hey, let me walk you down. We went and got in the elevator. He lunged forward and kissed me. I was completely just numb at that moment. I wasn't able to put anything together in that moment. And I truly had no idea where I was until I walked out of the building and saw that I was actually just across the street from the bar. And so I called my partner. I called him over and over again, and it just went to voicemail. Later on that evening, I went to his friend's house. They had a big picture window in the living room, and I saw that it was full of people. They were all watching a football game. He saw me. He got his jacket on. He came outside. And it had started to snow, actually, right at that moment. And so I'm standing out there in the snow, and he comes out, and it just felt so small right then and so vulnerable. I really, in that moment, felt extremely unworthy of love. And I said, I was raped last night. And he said, you weren't raped. I saw you with that guy. You wanted to go off with him. And I said, are you really telling somebody who was just raped that they weren't? And he kind of looked at me and he said, all right, come here. And he gave me a hug. And then he said, I went home with that girl that we met at the house, and I think I want to pursue a relationship with her. And I just said, okay, well, good luck. And I turned around and left. I had plans to walk on the Camino de Santiago. It's a 500-mile walk across Spain, and it's a pilgrimage that's been around for hundreds, maybe 1,000 years. It was something that I had wanted to do for a long time, and when the assault happened, it ended up being 12, maybe 13 days before I left to walk on the Camino. So about halfway through that trip, where everybody sort of starts falling apart physically, these feelings about what had happened, they were too difficult to box up. it started to become like a song that was stuck in my head. It hit me like a ton of bricks, and I ended up emotionally falling apart, crying on the side of the trail. But I kept walking, and the most important thing that happened to me after that is I started to get out of my head a little more and listening to other people's stories. And I understood that the trauma is not just mine. I don't own it. There's a lot of people going through it. And at that point, I realized, wow, it takes a ton of mental strength to command your body to do this every day. And you should realize that if you can do this, you're strong. Fall of 2015, which is the following year, there's a Facebook post by Cordelia referencing a Reddit thread where they were talking about good places to eat in Bellingham, and somebody suggested Cosmos Bistro. She said, you know, the co-owner Jameson Rogayan is a known rapist. I commented, this person raped me, and gave a brief overview of what had happened. And I guess that some other people had reached out too because of that thread. And she immediately set up a closed Facebook group. And word started to get around, and it turned out that there were a lot of women who had been sexually assaulted by him over the years. So we went to the police and we gave statements, and he was arrested after that. The trial was very hard because the defense definitely tried to portray me as an irresponsible drug addict. I felt more like someone who's trying to defend themselves and tell their side of the story. They kept telling us it was a slam dunk. He was definitely going to be convicted, and he wasn't. It was a mistrial. You only need one person on a jury who's not convinced. They chose to let him do a plea deal. They did not want to retry him because of all of the logistics of doing it the first time. And they didn't want to put us through it again. The positive thing that came out of it was being asked to deliver a victim statement at his sentencing, because that was really the only first time and last time that we were asked to just say what we wanted to say to him. I wanted to reach out and talk to him as a human. One of the reasons is that on the Camino, I realized that everyone's been through trauma, even people who inflict trauma. The most important thing to me ultimately throughout this entire thing was to stop the cycle of what he was doing, to keep him from raping other people. Hello, I would like to address the court today about my rape at the hands of Jameson Rogayan. I would like to address Jameson first. Jameson, I know that you don't think that you did anything wrong. I could see in the way you lied about your version of events that you were more concerned. I know the complicated abuse and exploitation of women that you perpetrated does not exist in a vacuum. Somewhere along the way, someone made you feel wrong or hurt you or abused you in some way. You are a broken person, and now we're both broken. All I wanted you. When you're ready, I would be willing to start a dialogue with you. I would like to listen to what has happened to you in your life that brought you to the place of being a serial rapist. That's the only kind of closure I can get from this, understanding you as a human, flawed and broken. To the court, I would like to express my deep gratitude that the victims who came forward were taken seriously. What followed was sometimes flawed and definitely took a huge emotional. This is not something that will go away for me, nor should it go away for him. But it is my hope that we can both become more human again if he starts from a place of telling the truth and taking responsibility for his actions. Not in the way you do for a plea deal, but in the way he must if he wants his life to have any sort of value. It wasn't like anything that I think anyone expected to hear, and I worried that I would let people down by offering that level of compassion. But ultimately, I think that compassion is like the most important quality we can share with each other as humans. And I still feel that way after everything that's happened. So this experience, as hard as it was, as long as it was, and as disappointing as it was in times, has actually become really transformative. I think the beginning of it was that victim statement and reaching out with compassion, and then also allowing myself to be interviewed about it, to even write my own story about what happened, It's been really transformative. And again, I don't feel like I'm doing this for me. I feel like I'm doing this for every victim of sexual assault. And we're definitely having a watershed moment with regards to that. And I hope that to provide a story that has an element of hope with it.
Erica Doudreau lives in Bellingham.